Hartlebin versus the University of Washington.
Your Honor, good morning.
Good morning.
I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. My name is Laura Allen. I represent Stacia Hartlebin, who is the student who is appealing a grant of summary judgment on her claims that the University of Washington failed to provide her with reasonable accommodations for her disability, which was retrograde amnesia or memory loss, along with the attendant difficulties she has in learning outside group settings. The issue that this appeal presents is whether summary judgment was appropriate on these material facts.
Can I ask you a question about how you've characterized her disability? In the briefing, I was under the impression that the disability was the retrograde amnesia, so that she didn't remember what she had learned in those classes. I don't remember the university being presented with a characterization of the learning environment she needs as a disability. Is there something in the record that does that?
Yes, Your Honor. When
what is it?
When Stacia first met with the DRS office, Terry Dobrich, or during their second meeting, she told her that she needed she couldn't learn through self-study, and what she needed was feedback and interaction. That was never pursued or followed up on. The issue.
Other than that statement in that meeting, did she present to the university anything in the form of a letter from some sort of a learning type expert, psychologist, doctor, or something? Was there anything besides what you've described?
It really never got that far, Your Honor. Aside from that meeting, she then, months later, when she was meeting with the USERO staff member, they brought up for the first time her professor's idea that, well, she could listen to recordings of lectures. And Stacia told her at the time, well, I've got these issues with focus and learning outside of a group setting, some words to that effect. And again,
is that been determined to be some sort of disability, though, the learning part of it? I understand the retrograde amnesia, but the learning part.
Yes.
The reason she could not benefit from listening to the tapes.
At that time, it wasn't developed because the discussion was cut off and things didn't go any further. But since then.
At this point, in front of the trial court, there was nothing that described that as a disability?
There was, Your Honor, and it's in the record. We have a letter from her physician saying specifically that because of her cognitive limitations, she needs to learn in group settings and have feedback.
Would anybody who's able to demonstrate they need to learn in group settings be entitled to free tuition at the University of Washington?
No, not necessarily. It would really depend. You know, all of this is on a case-by-case basis.
Okay, what would be the variables?
If she needed help learning in a group setting?
Somebody doesn't need to be your client.
Okay.
A hypothetical person presents uncontroverted scientific information that she needs to learn in a group setting and cannot learn on her own. Is that person entitled to free tuition? And if there are variables, what are they?
Okay, first of all, I would disagree that we're talking about free tuition here. This is an accommodation.
Okay, just indulge me in answering
okay.
my question rather than dodging it.
Okay, I'm not trying to do that, Your Honor. To learn in a group setting, I think in this case, if it had been pursued, if Stacia could have had the recordings and some sort of feedback or interactive component included with it, for example, a tutor or somebody sitting with her and talking about the material and answering her questions, maybe giving her some tests, I think that would have satisfied.
So you don't necessarily need access to the class as long as you have access to the substance of what's taught there plus an opportunity for interaction with a third party?
That's exactly what our point has been, Your Honor. I don't think we'd be here today if she had been able to pursue the recordings with some kind of interactive or feedback component added to it.
And she was offered the opportunity to have the recordings. Did she request that she have the recordings with this interaction, or did she simply say, no, I should get free classes, or some third choice?
Well, the way the conversation unfolded, she had been called into the meeting with Kate Leonard, the staff member, and told that the university hadn't done anything wrong in denying her the opportunity to sit through the classes again. At the very end of the meeting, as Stacia's leaving, Kate says, wait. I've got these recordings here, and tosses some papers to her that had the link to the recordings. Stacia says to her, well, I don't think recordings are going to work alone. I've got issues with learning outside of a group setting. I have cognitive issues. I need feedback. And this is something she had said earlier to the DRS and had never been pursued. So she goes to look at the recordings on her own, and at that point, Kate says to her, before she leaves, says, you know, there's no more discussion. This is all the university is going to offer, sort of a take it or leave it. So there was no interactive process. There was no discussion of, well, wait a minute, what kind of interaction would you need? What kind of feedback would you need? They didn't sit down and work this out. Basically, Stacia left with the papers. She took a look. She could see she was just going to be watching recordings, and she wrote her professor and said, you know, thank you very much for this opportunity, for the idea that you came up with the recordings. But, you know, I have these cognitive issues, and she set it out in writing, and the professor didn't pass it on. Nothing more was done with it. So I really don't think we would be here today if the university had said, well, wait a minute, let's look at the recordings. Let's see what we can do. What sort of feedback do you need? What sort of interaction do you need? And maybe asked her for some medical documentation and some ideas on how this could work. But none of that was done, Your Honor, and that's part of our claim here, is that she was simply cut off with, look, take the recordings, that's it. So there was not this, what the Frisano court calls this give and take, trial and error, interactive process that went on here.
Is there any other category of student that you're aware of that doesn't pay tuition to attend a class?
Any other category of student?
Yes.
I'm not aware of any, Your Honor, you know, other than they offer financial aid or scholarships and that sort of thing. But I would want to point out, Your Honor, that in the Barnett case, the U.S. Supreme Court case we cited in our reply brief, the court said in there, sometimes you're going to have to reduce barriers that are also barriers for non-disabled. That's just the nature of the law.
Well, if we had the same person as your client who had a trust fund to pay for college, we wouldn't be arguing about this, would we?
Well, but I think the analysis, we may not, but the analysis that you have to look at, and I'm looking at the Housing Authority cases that were like that, is that you have to look at, is the request for accommodation directly related to her disability? And if the answer is yes, then you have to say, will denying that accommodation or not working it out, will that deny her full enjoyment of her classes? That's really the analysis, not whether she's rich or not.
Economic status a disability?
No, not per se. And
can it be a component of a disability?
It certainly can, and there are cases we've cited that have shown that.
What case do you think is the strongest case for that you've cited?
I think my strongest case would be the Bentley case, where the woman couldn't walk up and down stairs, and so instead of a fourth floor walk-up, she asked for a first floor apartment but not have to pay the extra rent. And the court said the analysis is this accommodation request related to her disability? Yes, it's related to the fact she can't walk up and down stairs. In Stacia's case, it's related to her request to relearn material in order that she can take advantage of the other services she had paid for. I see my time is up. Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning again. May it please the court. Howard Goodfriend representing the respondent, the University of Washington. Let me address, I'm going to address the accommodation issue, but I hopefully time will permit me to go back, because first of all, I don't think requiring all students to pay tuition is discriminatory. It's not disparate treatment. I'll talk about reasonable accommodation, but I also would point out the third point is that the requested accommodation here, and let's be clear, this was always about a tuition waiver. You can call it free tuition. You can call it a tuition waiver. You could call it an accommodation by excusing tuition. But whatever you call it, it fundamentally altered the essential nature of the delivery of education at the university. And I don't think there's any case that anyone has cited anywhere in which the quid pro quo of payment for services is completely waived as a reasonable accommodation. The Bentley, the housing cases that you've heard about, I'm going to talk about those briefly. You don't get free rent. You don't get to excuse the obligation to pay rent in exchange for an apartment. You may get a waiver of a parking fee.
Can I interrupt you there? I assume that all of the financial aid benefits that are available to other students without independent means to pay for college were available to Ms. Hartleben.
That's correct, and she was referred to those resources. That's at CP 195. Yes. She was given an extended period for the completion of her master's degree instead of the usual 12 months. She could take as long as she needed. She was given extended time for completion of any assignments and exams. And she was given the audio tapes of all classes she'd previously taken. Now, let's talk about the interactive process a little bit. If you look at CP 184, this is not something that was just thrown at her and not discussed. There is an email from Ms. Hartleben to the department, not really the chair, but the head of this program, Dr. Bender, where she says, I want to thank you for suggesting the recorded classes. This is at CP 184. Sadly, I don't think it would be a good option for me. And at the end, she says, I can't imagine being able to really take those classes properly by just auditing in person or not. What she insisted from the get-go was a tuition waiver. And that was something that the university explored. They determined that they had never done it before and that it was not a financial accommodation, was not an accommodation for her disability. The law imposes a prospective duty of reasonable accommodation. It doesn't obligate.
What about the tapes plus a TA, for example? So she's got somebody to talk to, bounce. Was that ever discussed?
It was never, no, because as you saw in this email, she rejected the offer of the tapes out of hand.
The university said it wouldn't work. Some burden to at least propose.
Well, what
that
the
is an alternative?
I don't think it does. I mean, I think the university has to engage in an interactive process, which entails a give and take. And if you say I want X. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Who proposes, or who has the burden of proposing an accommodation that overcomes the disability?
The employee, well, the plaintiff, the disabled person, has the burden of proposing the accommodation and the burden of showing that it's reasonable and the burden of once an interactive process starts, and there's no question that it was ongoing here, it went on for several months, that you can't just stick to your guns and say I'm engaging in an interactive process. It's a give and take. And if you look at Judge Applewick's opinion, I think it's in the Frazino v. Seattle School District case, it's an exchange and a back and forth. And the person who is seeking the accommodation has to budge. They can't just say, no, that's not going to work, no, that's not going to work, no, that's not going to work. And that's what happened here. What she wanted and what she wants in the trial court and here was a tuition waiver. And there was no clinical evidence presented to the university at any time about the inability to learn in group settings. That evidence, all we heard about was retrograde amnesia. The only medical testimony or letter or opinion that came in about this inability to learn in group settings comes from a physician at the disclosure of primary witnesses in this lawsuit in April 2015, not 2 years earlier. So,
is that a requirement that the person requesting the accommodation produce clinical evidence in the absence of a request for it by the person being asked to accommodate?
Well, what the person needs to do is establish that they had either a disability or the effects of a disability, and all anyone was talking about at this point at the university level was retrograde amnesia, and that was documented, and that was the focus. But let me get back to the tuition waiver aspect of this. I mean, if Ms. Hartleben was a Star Wars fan and had seen the first episode and then wanted to go, but had forgotten it because of her retrograde amnesia, and the Cinerama's throwing the trilogy, I mean, does she get to go see the movie again for free because she forgot it. This isn't the same as giving hearing enhancements.
Here she's trying to gain knowledge that presumably will allow her to pursue a career. It's a little different than being entertained.
Well, yeah, the interests are different, but what you're saying is my retrograde amnesia doesn't allow me to fully appreciate the services that I now want to obtain. So you need to accommodate that by letting me redo what I've done in the past for free, paying for it. I don't think the law against discrimination requires that. And as I said, the quid pro quo of money in exchange for services is a fundamental aspect of any covered entity's services here, basically. I mean, whether you're talking about a cinema or you're talking about a university. I mean, if I had a head injury that prohibited me from remembering everything I learned to take the bar, would I have the ability to go back to my institution of higher learning, to my law school, and say, I got to retake these classes. And by the way, I'm not going to pay for it. And I'm not even going to apply for financial aid. It's on your nickel. I think that's basically the argument that's being offered here. So,
would it be any different if you were halfway through your first year of law school instead of having passed the bar?
Would it make any difference? No, I don't think it would. People withdraw academically at the university for all kinds of health and disability reasons, and you are entitled to a refund of some of your tuition if you withdraw within a certain amount of time in the quarter. But if you don't get it all back, and you got to retake the class to get the credit, and you don't get to do it for free. I think, you know, that's not free. Services is not an accommodation. An accommodation is working with you within the existing framework to deal with your disability and give you the opportunity to succeed that other non-disabled people have. And that's what the university did here. Do you have any further questions of me? We ask that the court affirm. Thank you.
Your Honor, it's not just the university's role to collect tuition and say, okay, now you can go to the class. What the university was offering here was an entire degree program, a computational linguistics program, and that's what she was paying for. The only reason she took those five classes that she needs to retake.
How's this any different than one of these private universities that sells education courses to get you what you need to qualify for a profession?
How is
what the university offers any different than that? You know, you see these ads on TV, you can learn how to be a computer repairman, or you can learn how to be someone that writes code for Microsoft, and you pay a for-profit university, you take these courses, you acquire these job skills, and you then can go out and obtain employment. How is what the university is offering in its degree program different?
Well, in some degree programs, it may not be different. But in this one, there was a number of courses that you had to take to get the computational linguistics degree. And these five courses in particular were core in order to be able to take the advanced courses and actually succeed in them. It's a very technical program. And so what she was buying in taking these five courses was really entree into the upper classes, the real meat of the guts of the program, and ultimately to be able to get her degree. The waiver of tuition, as the defendant has called it, is really what we have here is not a fundamental alteration of the university. She's not looking for another grade or credit that many of these students who have to retake classes or who take hardship withdrawals, the reason they take them over is because they don't have the grade or the credit. She's got that. She's not looking for that. She's looking for something really pretty simple. She wants to sit through these classes again so she can get the interaction or feedback. She should actually be admired for wanting to do this, not castigated. And alternatively, she would be very content with having the recordings as long as she had some sort of interaction.
Thank you very much. We will be at recess.